show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's that time of year again. We're going to do the over-under predictions. We got some bold predictions as well to throw in there. So we'll get to that immediately after. We got a couple little tidbits of news to go over, and then we'll head right in. So introductions, of course. I am Jeff Hur, and with me is the man who is neither over nor under, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this wonderful evening?
Pretty good. It's really nice outside. I was able to go
super nice
run around downtown Lawrence for a bit after work, and it is just fantastic. It's perfect spring day. Really gets me in the mood for baseball, which starts in a week. Very early opening day on March 29th, which is, I think, as early as they've ever done, which is weird, but, you know, they get extra days off now, so that's that's what happens. So,
indeed.
Couldn't come any sooner, really.
Nope. It's here, folks. And to celebrate that fact, we have our annual over-under pancake jamboree. But before we get into those, our predictions for the year, some little tidbits of news. The Royals made a couple signings. They signed relief pitcher Justin Grimm, who was most recently with the Chicago Cubs. He was on their World Series team from a couple years ago. Nothing super crazy, just typical reliever arm type of guy. They also signed Clay Buchholz, which you can cross him off the can't believe they weren't already a Royal list.
Right.
And they did sign him, though, however, to a minor league deal, another one of those kind of lottery ticket type things. Just, hey, if he bounces back, has a really good season, we can bring him up, and he'll either give us some good games, or he'll give us some good games, and then the Royals can trade him off and maybe get something for him for a team that is in the hunt. So who knows? We'll see there. And then do you want to give a breakdown of who the who the Royals sent down?
They're starting to clear out camp. I mean, again, we're a week away. There's only a handful of games in spring training left. The Royals, I think it's Tuesday, they're doing their exhibition in Omaha. So they really, I mean, they only have a few days where they're going to even be in surprise. So good time to clean out the big league camp. They sent down Miguel Almonte, who was pitching really well. Looked like he might have a shot at actually breaking the big league roster for opening day. But he's, you know, like we've kind of talked about, he's one of those guys who has options. And if they're looking to start the year with guys who have fewer options or no options, then, well, that makes that decision easy. Trevor Oakes got sent down. Cam Gallagher went down, which isn't too surprising since Drew Butera. I'm going to say his name right one day, but I always Drew Butera. It's every time, and I'm aware I'm doing it.
A lot of ooh sounds.
Drew Butera. He's there. He's the backup catcher. Ramon Torres was sent down, which was kind of surprising because he seemed like a shoo-in to be the utility guy. But Ryan Goins has played very well. Looks like he's going to end up being added to the 40-man roster and be on the bench for opening day. Torres at least gets the opportunity to play every day in Omaha now, which probably long-term is better for him. Goins can play, you know, three infield positions. He could probably play outfield if you needed him to. So, you know, I guess once he signed, it was pretty clear that he might have had a good shot because he's like Chris Getz with a little more power, which is not saying much, but you know, he's kind of that speedy, scrappy utility guy. So the Royals love those types, and he's, and to his credit,
yes, they do.
He's played well, so it's not like they just kind of handed it to him. He's earned a shot, and if it gives Torres some time to, you know, play every day in Omaha, that's great. They also sent down guys who aren't on the 40-man roster, like Ryan O'Hearn, who has played well the last 2 weeks. Kevin Lenick, who I bet we'll see again later. He's pitched pretty well this spring. Richard Lovelady, the cult hero, was sent down also. So another one of those where it's like, you could have seen him making the roster. You know, but when they, you know, bring in Nolasco and Clay Buchholz, and they already have Brian Flynn, and again, options, 40-man, those things matter a lot when you're trying to fit these guys in. If he pitches well in the minors, we'll probably see him later this year too. Josh Staumont, Glenn Sparkman, who by most reports is throwing really, really well down there. And then that's pretty much about it. A couple other guys, arms, some utility guys, but no one of huge note down there. So they're starting to get it cleared out. You know, some of the guys who are still around, Blaine Boyer seems like he's going to make the team, which is odd because I don't even remember seeing him in games, but he's apparently thrown like 7 or 8 innings. So, you know, I'll trust the numbers on MLB.com.
There you go.
It's kind of rounding into shape. a lot of the usual names will be there that we kind of expect. Ryan Goings isn't really that big of a surprise. So a little bit of stuff, it's kind of interesting to see it all shape up. And it's also important to note that the opening day roster is not necessarily the roster they'll end the year with, as we definitely know. So I think a lot of attention goes to the opening day roster, but in a lot of ways it's kind of just like shuffling things to, you know, take advantage of the depth that you have in a system, and that roster inventory that comes up is really important for just about everybody. So if there's no need to expose a guy who might contribute to waivers, then why do it? So they'll start the year with guys who maybe have no options or are on minor league deals that need to be added, and see what happens. And if they need to adjust, then they'll adjust. So, the kind of key players, the starting nine, the starting rotation, the back end of the bullpen, pretty much set and pretty much what you would have figured. So not a whole lot of surprises for an offseason that was very surprising. So kind of a weird dichotomy there, but, yeah, that's just kind of the small news, the tidbits, as you say. Makes me think of that Scrubs episode with Molly Shannon. She says tidbit a lot. But, yeah, I don't know.
Always down for a Scrubs reference.
Right.
But yeah, as the weather rounds itself into shape, so indeed does the roster of the Royals as spring training moves forward and chugs ever closer to an end. Getting ready for that sweet, sweet start of the season. And that means we've got some predictions to make, Mike.
Mike, our fourth time, and fourth year.
Predictions we have. Yes, indeed. Fourth annual.
Fourth
prediction
annual.
Jamboree.
Over, under.
So.
Prediction.
Where shall we start? Let's start with Jake Junis. The newest of the players that we're going to talk about, he's the newest, even though he spent quite a good chunk of the season last year with the team. But so I'll start laying it out here. You can give your prediction, and then I'll give mine. We'll go from there. So our over-under for Jake Junis, who we all anticipate and pretty much, I mean, he will be in the rotation to start, you know, barring some catastrophe in the next week and a half.
Which, who knows?
Who knows, yeah. He will be in the starting rotation. So 25 games started for him. Just to give a little context here, Danny Duffy has only started more than 25 games once in his career. So, you know, he's had some injury issues. So, you know, it's not as something that, you know, I mean, if a pitcher is healthy and not, you know, awful, then 25 starts isn't the hardest thing in the world, but it's a good barometer of, you know, if you were healthy for most of the season, if you were performing well. That's, you know, that's kind of what we're getting at here. Is he going to be healthy enough and perform well enough to get over 25 starts? So why don't you start? What do you think?
Well, a lot of what goes into this is especially with somebody like Junis, who will be coming off of really this ideally will be his first full year in the majors. It puts him in a position where 25 games started is you know, if he pitches well and he's healthy, he should be able to get to that easily. But kind of hidden in that number is the question of will he stay healthy? Will he stay effective? Just looking at it last year, he, after kind of bouncing around up and down here and there, he made 16 starts. So, you know, that's not too bad for someone who you know, really wasn't on the radar so much at the beginning of the year and did a lot of bullpen work at different times and did spend some time going back and forth from Omaha. So if the improvement that we saw and the performance that we saw the last, you know, 2 months of the season last year are for real or even close to it. I mean, he pitched pretty well for those last, you know, 8 weeks of the season, and he's pitched well this spring. I would say that's a very easy over because they would have really no reason to pull him out of the rotation if he's pitching well and he's healthy. I would expect that. I kind of think he's going to come out and throw really well. And while I don't think he's going to, you know, blow up into like Cy Young territory or anything, I think he's going to be pretty solid. And then I guess if it means betting on health, then I would kind of lean that way. I think 30 starts is kind of what I would be thinking and expecting. There might be a point where they shut him down later in the year, depending on, you know, how the Royals are contending, if they want to manage his innings. But I think that should be more than enough to eclipse 25. So I'm going to go with over on Jake Junis.
And I am going to go with the under. Okay. So I think for me, I don't think it will be a question of effectiveness. I don't really think Junis has had any sort of huge injury history or something, but just given what we know of pitchers in baseball and the first full season for Junis staring ahead of him, first kind of workload of first full season of major league workload, all that coming together, I feel like he's going to miss a few games. I don't know that he is going to be, you know, miss half the season or something, but, you know, miss two starts here, miss a couple starts there. I think it'll end up being under, and he'll probably be closer to that 150-ish innings territory, 120 to 150, somewhere in there, would be my guess. So,
Pacoda projects him for 23, so you're kind of right in line with that. As they, they kind of have it averaging out that way too. So,
and this for me is a head over heart thing. I don't really feel good about doing it. I like Jake Junis. I really, you know, I think he's going to succeed again. I don't think it'll be any sort of a performance thing, but and I want him to stay healthy. But something just, it's really hard for a pitcher to stay healthy all season. That's why it's so valuable when you find one that I can actually do it and do it at a high level, like a Clayton Kershaw or something, even though he's had
even he has
injuries
quite
in recent history. But that's what I think. But I don't feel good about it, even though I picked the under.
All right, that's totally fair. Those are perfectly reasonable. I guess you could also say that the Royals have a lot of those guys like Scott Barlow, Trevor Oakes, Ricky Nolasco, and Clay Buchholz now, that if there is a situation where they need to change it up in any way, Junis has options, could easily go to Omaha if they needed to work on anything or give him a rest or whatever. So, you know, they have some depth, whereas last year Junis was kind of thrown in there as like, we need you to eat these innings. You need to do this. And this year they don't.
He was the depth last year.
He really was. Thankfully, he pitched well at the end, or they would have been in even more dire straits. So, all right. Well, we'll see how that goes. I think that's pretty reasonable on your end. So, all right. I'll pick the next one. All right. Let's see. I don't know which one I want to do. Let's go with another workload. Let's talk about Jorge Soler.
Okay.
The big story and the big narrative all offseason was Ned Yost talking about Soler and, you know, Cuthbert and Bonifacio. And obviously Bonifacio is not going to reach this. But Ned Yost said that he wanted to see Jorge Soler get 500 at-bats this year. So that's what we're going to set our over-under. 500 at-bats for Jorge Soler. I went first last time. Jeff, I'll let you go first on this one.
All right, so I'm going to go with the over on this one. Now, we haven't seen a ton from Soler to suggest that even if he stayed healthy, that he would necessarily even be perform well enough to get that many at-bats. But I think given a fresh season, full off-season, he knows he's coming in likely to be the starter. He knew coming into the off-season that he was likely to be the starter. We know now he's going to start, whether it's, you know, in right field or DH, probably in the field. But I think that he's going to do well enough, and he's going to show enough power, even if his average isn't that high, that the Royals are going to feel comfortable keeping him in there. It'll be, I feel like, kind of like a Kendrys Morales in 2016-ish type of season. You know, maybe start off slow, the batting average won't look good, but the power will still be there, maybe kind of go off and on. And, you know, and I think being a younger player and one that the Royals have control over for a few years, I think they'll be inclined to keep him in and seeing, you know, getting him those consistent at-bats. You know, I mean, that was kind of the line on him, too, that he never really got consistent at-bats in Chicago. So if he were to be in a situation where he could get consistent at-bats, know he was playing in the field every day, et cetera, that his natural ability, his power, his hitting, everything would kind of kick up a little bit. You know, some players are like that. They need to be in the flow of the game. You know, I mean, it was always a topic of discussion with Billy Butler when he was in Kansas City. You know, he, even though he wasn't good enough to play in the field, specifically over someone like Eric Hosmer defensively, you know, he always talked about how it helped keep him in the game if he was out in the field playing. So, you know, some players are like that. They prefer it. And that was kind of, you know, what you heard from about Soler when the Royals acquired him. So I think that given all that, there's going to be a pretty good chance that the Royals are going to be willing to take some bad with the good, if you will, when dealing with Soler this year. And I think they're going to keep him in there as long as they can. And I think that will end up in getting them more than 500 at-bats for him.
All right. Well, if you just do the math and you think, let's say 4 at-bats per game, he really only has to play 125 games. So even somebody like Soler who has some injury history, that should be easy to do. And the Royals in particular are in a position where they don't have much, you know, much to lose. I mean, they shouldn't if the projections are right and if kind of our hunch of how good they'll be this year is right. So I think as long as he's healthy and he's in, drink every time you hear this, best shape of his life. And, you know, he really does look like he's completely in shape, and he, you know, looked like he was pretty much in shape beforehand. You know, he's had a pretty good spring, yeah, maybe a little slow to start, but not as slow as last spring. And he's certainly played well the last couple weeks. He's tied for the Cactus lead, or at least he entered today tied for the Cactus lead, Cactus League lead in home runs with 6. He's walked pretty well. The strikeouts are kind of just going to be there. But I'm going to go over as well because it's a fairly easy threshold for him to reach. the Royals have the DH spot, right field, maybe some left field if they shift things around. So they've got spots to play him in. He doesn't have any options left. So, you know, if he's not going to Omaha, you know, they're not going to option him there. They might have the ability to outright him, but probably not. So they're not going to, you know, waive him or anything. So I think he's going to be up the whole year, and how well he plays is going to determine how much playing time he gets. But the Royals are also in a position where they, you know, if they're not playing well, they may as well just see what they've got in him and just kind of ride it out. Jorge Bonifacio being suspended for half the year really helps him out too, because that puts him in right field instead of DH. It creates a need for somebody to be in the field. So I think he can do that. The one qualifier I would put on this, we said at bats, and he does walk a lot. So there's a chance that he might cover 500 plate appearances and maybe not 500 at bats.
Valid point.
So we'll see. We'll see. But I think, you know, plate appearances is really what we mean. And either way, I think he's going to go over. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's got, you know, an MVP season coming, but I feel pretty good about him. He had some early bumps and didn't get, you know, his first hit for a little while this spring, but he kind of got it going, had one of those like 3-for-3 or 3-for-4 games. And, you know, the power has definitely been there. So I feel pretty good about him. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. Maybe not one that you feel like, okay, it was worth trading Wade Davis to get him, but you know, I think he's got definitely a shot to clear that 125 games or so. And if he does that, 500 at bats should be easy to reach. So I feel pretty good about him this year.
Yeah. And I think what the point that you mentioned, is maybe the most crucial one, in that they've got nothing to lose, essentially, meaning the Royals, in terms of playing him. So I think that was kind of the biggest factor for me, that, you know, 3 years ago when the Royals were competing for a World Series, would they have stuck with someone who went into a bit of a slump? You know, depending on who, maybe, but they also likely would have tried to find a better option if they could. But given what their situation will be this year, definitely think that they'll be willing to take some of their lumps on that one in order to hopefully, you know, get the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, if you will.
And I would figure if they're playing well enough to be in that position where it's like, oh, we're actually contending on accident right now, so there's probably going to be a big reason why. So, I mean, it just kind of – it really just – it's hard to see a reason why they would take him out of the lineup if he's healthy enough to play. Cause they have a good reason. They've got, you know, a couple more years, on that contract to see why. And they're pretty invested because of who they traded to get him. So I think they owe it to themselves to kind of prioritize him over maybe some other guys. You know, if it comes down to deciding between two players, I think Soler is going to get every look that he can until there's just no other option than to move on. So I think he's got a good opportunity this year.
Yeah, and especially when you consider, you know, granted they're not paying Soler like they're paying Gordon, but they've put up with Gordon being one of the poorer hitters in baseball the last couple of years and still trotted him out there every day. So
right.
If that shows you what the Royals are all about. Now, we'll move on to the next topic here. Let's see. I'll start this one off. I'm going to pick everybody's favorite topic. Alcides Escobar. How many games will Escobar hit leadoff for this team this year? We've decided to set the over-under for that at 125. We'll keep alternating as we have, so we'll let you go first on this one. Okay. 125 games at leadoff for Escobar, over-under.
I'm going to admit that some of these are very arbitrary because I don't really even know what we should set it at. But I'm going to say under, and that's really because the perception on Escobar and the leadoff spot doesn't match what the actual reality is, which is what actual reality. That's a nice redundancy. it just you know, because the whole thing is made up of the Esky magic and the World Series and what he did in 2015. When you really look at it, over the last 4 years, he's averaged about 104 times per year batting leadoff. Granted, in 2014, he only led off 16 times, which is kind of strange to think about. But when I look at that, and when I look down the line, you know, over the years, you know, last year they hit Whit Merrifield and Alex Gordon lead off a little bit. They put Escobar there a little bit. He led off 82 times last year. 2016, he led off 82 times. They did a mix of Gordon, Whit, Gerard Dyson, Paulo Orlando even. I think Mike Moustakas might have led off a couple of games, strangely enough. And, of course, 2015, he led off 131 times. So, you know, that's quite a lot. But when I look at where the Royals are this year and the team that they've put together going into opening day, the texture of that team really matches more of 2014 when it comes to the leadoff spot. Because that year, the leader was Noriaki, who led off, I think he led off about 100 times that year. And we've already made the comparison between Aoki and John Jay. Very similar on base, you know, singles slashing type of hitters. And Jay is probably going to be the leadoff guy on opening day. If it's not him, it might be Whit Merrifield. If it's not him, if Alex Gordon hits well, they'll probably put him there. So I think by the time that all settles up, Escobar might be like the fourth option to actually be the leadoff guy when it's all said and done. So I'm definitely going to say under. I would say if we set it at 80, I might even say under. But if I don't even know how to set that number. So, but I just kind of feel like 2014 is a nice comparison to how the team set up this season. And that year he didn't really hit, you know, he didn't really hit that high in the order that season. It was more Aoki, Infante, and then, you know, the big names. And then Escobar was more around 7, 8, 9. So I think that's going to be what you see most of this season.
That was a very well thought out, reasoned and logical approach to the answer.
However,
to the over under,
we're dealing with Ned Yost.
On the other hand, am going to go with the over on the 125, and this is my, just as you alluded to, my hashtag Yosted prediction for the over under for this year. it just feels like the Royals love Escobar. We know they do.
Yep.
And, you know, with good reason. He's meant a lot to this organization. He's done a lot for him. He was a big part of that World Series championship team.
Yep.
Hasn't
ALCS MVP.
Absolutely. Has not proven to be super valuable since. But regardless, so, you know, signing him back, even though it wasn't a ton of money, I still feel like the Royals are going to try and find a way to justify this signing. And what that means is, let's bat him lead off. So, you know, every time something good happens, we can get the Esky Magic hashtag going. We can start dealing with, you know, start trying to pump that stuff up again. And I just feel like they're going to find just about every single excuse that they can to put him in that leadoff spot. And I think that means that 125 number is going to be eclipsed rather easily, is what I think. So, and yeah, you know, John Jay is a very good point, especially when making the Nori Aoki comparisons. But I still feel like the Royals, they just like Escobar too much to not put him there. That's what I feel like this is.
They can't help themselves.
Exactly. They cannot get out of their own way. So.
Yeah, I remember that week where they tried to rearrange the lineup and put, like, Gordon and then Zobrist at the top of the lineup, and they, like, they scored like two runs a game for like four games, and so they went right back to Escobar at the leadoff.
Yeah.
And Yost is like, I don't know why, but it works. Well, okay. They wanted a ring, so I would have.
Yeah, I mean, in a season like that.
Who am I to judge?
Okay. You know.
Right.
In a season like that, you just go with the flow. But normally, under normal circumstances, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be my turn.
Off your turn now.
Let's see. Let's go with let's go to Mike Moustakas. So,
all right.
Didn't expect to be talking about Mike Moustakas this year.
No, we did.
This is an ambitious one. So we're going to look at Moustakas and let's see how motivated he is this year, and pull the over under of 38 home runs. So is he going to break his own single season record and career high in 2018? I will let you start.
So, and this may be wishful thinking on my part, but I am going to roll with the over on this one. So I think it's essentially a contract year for Moose. We mutual options rarely ever get exercised. So I don't imagine Moose will be back with the Royals in 2019. So 2018 is what he's got to kind of put himself back in the minds of the people. And if there are people or if there were organizations that just weren't quite willing to spend the money on Moose this year because they said, okay, you know, he hit 38 home runs last year. That's a great number, but that's the only time he's even had close to that power. You know, his career high before that was 22 home runs. So, you know, we're not confident with that, along with the previous knee injury, that he can maintain, you know, being healthy and that level of power for another season. Well, here's your chance. Might prove it that you can do it. And, you know, I he'll have a much better chance, even though the free agent crowd next year it's a bit more crowded. But I still think Moose will have, you know, if you can do 35 plus home runs 2 years in a row, that looks a lot better than just the one time. So I think he'll have a better chance at getting a bigger contract next season if, in fact, he can pull it off again. And I think that he will definitely be really gunning for that, because especially with the Royals not really predicting any sort of contention, that I think – that's going to be something that he's, you know, he doesn't have to worry about. Is this going to, or he probably likely won't be worrying about, oh, is this helping or hurting the team right now? Just, hey, I'm going to hit as many home runs as I can.
Right.
And we've seen many Scott Boras clients in years past that have had career years and in contract years, and for very similar reasons. We know Boras likes to pump those kinds of things, et cetera. So, we're going to see the over on that. That's my logical reasoning, but of course the wishful thinking aspect is
right.
If they get over it, I mean, the torturous way would be, of course, for him to break it and get 39 for the season. But there's a very good chance that if he gets more than 38, he ends up hitting 40, and that was the only thing that he didn't accomplish last year, as we were so pumped to see him break the record, and it seemed like a foregone conclusion that he would get to 40,
yeah,
you know, mid-season, and unfortunately his knee started bugging him later in the season. He didn't quite get there, but hey, take two, we got the chance. I think he's going to capitalize. I'm thinking 40, maybe even 42 if I'm feeling saucy.
Well, I don't know. When I started, when I brought this up, I wrote under in my column in my notebook here. But I don't know. I mean, I'm already having second thoughts on that, because, you know, last year hit 38, but like you said, the knee problems, came up, and it wasn't even like that he aggravated it in the field or something. It was just, he got beamed, he got hit in the hip, and some of that swelling, you know, impacted how he ran, and his knee kind of gave him problems later, and he was just kind of getting by because it was the only shot they had to do anything playoff-wise. You know, if they had any last remaining sliver of a shot, he had to be in the lineup. And still ended up, even with the drought in, you know, August and September of, you know, not as many home runs, he's still at 38. So I wonder then if the pressure, expectations, attention that was put on that record last year, once he crossed, you know, the 30 home run mark, if that makes it a little simpler. Plus, he's probably not going to get hit on the hip by Bruce Rondon in a blowout game and have 3 weeks where he struggles with the knee and doesn't hit as well. I mean,
let's hope not anyway.
A reasonable expectation that that's going to happen. Plus, when you look at it, that last year he hit 24 home runs on the road. That bodes well. I mean, Kauffman Stadium has always been a hindrance to the home run. But, you know, if you hit 24 homers in the other half of the year, well, that's a pretty good way to break a single season record for a team. And in 2016, when he got hurt and tore up his ACL, he had 7 home runs in 27 games, which ends up being a 42 home run pace over 162. So I still think under, but it's a lot closer than I kind of thought when we started to talk about him. And I would say under just because, you know, after a peak year, there may be some regression. It might be that he's, you know, going to be 29 years old and is just in that power peak now, and he's going to have a few years of 30-some homers, and then it's going to tail off. So, I mean, I completely allow for the possibility that he might, in a year where he's trying to, you know, maybe has a chip on his shoulder, whether he says so or not. Moustakas is a fiery, competitive dude, and I'm sure he's a little bit ticked off that, you know, he had to sign for a one-year deal at $6.5 million and would be really happy to, you know, go back in with a good season next year. So I can definitely see it. I can't quite get myself to make that call. So I'm still going to say under, but I totally get it. And if anybody's going to hit 40 homers on this team, it's probably going to be Moose. So I'll qualify it with that.
And that is that is kind of like your Jake Junis selection. Maybe you go with the under, but don't feel good about it. Kind of like I did with Junis's.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I totally get it. I see, like, historically how he could do it. I just can't quite get there, just because 40 seems insurmountable for a Royals player.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to our final one here. So the final one we're going to go with, I mean, we already talked about a little bit earlier, Alex Gordon. So for this one, we actually we looked at the projections and took the 50th percentile prediction for Alex Gordon for his batting average. So Gordon has – it's been no secret that he has struggled mightily the last couple years. And let's see, I'm pulling up his numbers here. So he hit 220 in 2016 and 208 last year with 312 and 293 on base percentages respectively. And that's coming off, you know, in the last, let's see, 5 seasons prior to that, he had not hit any lower than 265, and he had 3 All-Star appearances, you know, including that just amazing 2011 season where he wasn't even an All-Star but hit 303, 376, 502 with 23 home runs.
Damn you, so, Aaron Crow.
I know, right? Man. But,
still don't get it, but anyway.
No, I still don't either. But anyway, it's what happened. And so it's kind of been confounding. You know, there's people, there was talk of, you know, injury. He got injured in 2015, and he came back and was a hero in the playoffs. And then he had some, you know, some tweaks and stuff last year in 2017, so maybe he just hasn't been fully healthy. Who knows? But anyway, his average has not been good, and so we put the over-under for his batting average at 239, which is the 50th percentile from the PECOTA projections. So let's you start it off. 239 batting average. What do you got?
I feel so bad because I don't think he's going to get there.
It's a tough topic because I like Gordon so much.
I know, and he's got such a big part of the franchise, and his story is so compelling and really fun to think about, especially with the way that it kind of capped off in 2015. To kind of get to where we're at now, where it's like, I don't know what to do. He's had a really miserable spring. I think he doubled in his first at bat in spring training, and that's the only extra base hit he's got. So that's difficult. He got two infield hits last night, which makes up one third of his hits all spring. So it's been a really, 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 really rough spring for Gordon, to the point that now he's on the backfields taking 12 to 14 at bats in minor league games just to work on timing, work on things, just to see more pitches. You know, we kind of saw over the last couple of years, just on the eye test, you know, that maybe his swing's a little late, a little long. It seems like fastballs are a little more challenging to him. And to be fair, I checked through like Fangraphs and Brooks Baseball and such. And over the last couple of years, the fastball that he's seen has been faster on average each year. And Gordon is older each year. So I guess I can see why. And I think what's kind of happened is that, you know, as he's gotten older and as you know, he's having trouble keeping up on the velocity, he's striking out a little bit more. Though last year he didn't strike out at a rate that was super high relative to previous years, but in 2016 he struck out almost 30% of the time, which is by far a career high for him. But what really kind of ends up happening is that, you know, on fastballs, technically, since 2016, that's actually a harder pitch, a faster pitch, has seen his highest batting average. You know, when you're comparing, you know, something thrown hard, something thrown soft, and a breaking pitch. But I think what ends up happening is that he's so geared up on the fastball and he cheats on it a little bit to just try to, just try to hunt out counts that fit, situations that fit for it, maybe the right pitcher, and almost like you're guessing fastball. And it seems to end up where it makes him susceptible to that off-speed stuff and that breaking stuff, and especially stuff that's high and low on the zone. Across the middle of the plate, he actually gets pretty good coverage when you look at it for the heat maps and such. But when you're looking high and low with off-speed and breaking stuff, it's just it gets a little bit ugly. And I think that, you know, for me, my theory, and I've got nothing to back this up, this is just a guess on because he's an aging player, I wonder if the eyesight is starting to get a little less sharp. You know, you don't pick it up as quickly. You're a millisecond late, you know, and that can be all the difference. But I don't know if that's what it is or not. I mean, he's kind of tweaked the swing. You know, it's just kind of a matter of he's got to get it going. And so far, his glove has kept him in the lineup the last 2 years. Not sure how much longer that continues, and it's really crappy to have to think about it. But, you know, I think when you kind of look at it from what he's done the last couple of years, so far I haven't seen that change that indicates that something's going to happen. Maybe he's just working on a particular approach this spring. Maybe there's something else, and eventually it's going to click for him, and I hope so. I really do, but with the last 2 years being really difficult for him, he's always been kind of a strikeout guy anyway. It's not a lot to really point me towards thinking that he's going to beat that projection. So it's one that I'm going to say under, and I'm going to really hope that I'm wrong because I really like Alex Gordon. I want him to do well. So I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree with pretty much everything that you said. It is difficult to talk about Alex Gordon just because I like him so much. And, you know, and we've kind of talked about this before on the show, with Gordon, you know, not only being kind of the homegrown player, not only just in, you know, like a Moose or a Hosmer in that he was just drafted by the organization, but that he grew up in, you know, quote unquote, Royals Kingdom, you know, just up the road in Omaha. So, you know, we've talked about all that before, and then, you know, seeing him go down and learn a new position in the minors after failing in the majors and coming back to such huge success and being the World Series hero and all that, you know, it's truly one of those, like, great kind of fan moments that you can have to see how Gordon has evolved into the player that he that I have to say this now, though, the player that he was, because it's not the player that he is anymore, unfortunately. And yeah, you know, I don't really know, you know, just as you said, you know, he is 34 now. So, I mean, you know, that's historically, you would say, okay, that's kind of on the bad side of the aging curve, you know, definitely. But couple things in Gordon's favor, you know, in recent times, even outside of the steroid era, you know, you've still seen lots of players have really good years into their 30s. And specifically, you didn't really think, or at least, you know, most people didn't, that Gordon would have too many issues dealing with, you know, growing older, if you will, because he takes such good care of himself physically, you know. So maybe a player loses a step at 32, but, you know, Gordon doesn't lose that step because he takes such good care of himself. But, you know, unfortunately, we haven't really seen that play out. And Gordon has been not very good. And unfortunately, you know, the Royals owe him $20 million this year and $20 million next year. So they got a lot of money coming his way, and that's all guaranteed. So, you know, I mean, the Royals are in a position where, I mean, they're going to play him because, you know, what else are they going to do? But if the Royals do happen to find themselves, like you mentioned earlier, if they happen to luck into some sort of contention somehow and Gordon is playing really poorly, you know, I mean, if the Royals are a game and a half out with, you know, come near the trade deadline or something, I mean, it could be worth the Royals. Gordon, if he was playing that badly, wouldn't have any trade value, but just cutting him loose and maybe trying to make a trade for somebody to take his spot, or maybe bringing up somebody, you know, maybe if Bonifacio's back by then and they think he's ready, they can bring him up or something. So, you know, who knows? And all that is to say, of course, that, you know, I'm definitely going with the under, and I just don't think he's, as much as it hurts to say, I think he's kind of done. And it's really surprising most of all, just because, you know, like I was saying, you thought he would age more gracefully. You know, people talk about, people talk about that cliff and just falling off that cliff, you know, and some players have it. Billy Butler did.
Billy Butler, who, I don't even know where he's at right now.
He's not in baseball.
He has literally no steam on him. And you would figure with that body type, sure, yeah, I get it. You would think that's a player that's going to age poorly in this game. It's not going to work very well. Prince Fielder had those neck issues. His dad, Cecil Fielder, didn't age well in this game. Those are, you know, big guys. Alex Gordon will be in better shape than, like, about anybody listening to this podcast still 30 years out from now, probably. Like, he's going to be a machine still. He just may not be able to hit a baseball very well relative to what, you know, he'd been able to before.
And just for some context, you know, Billy Butler, so his last year with the Royals was 2014. In 2015, he hit .251, .323, .390 for a .713 OPS with 15 home runs, right, and 65 RBIs. Now, for someone you're paying what Butler was getting paid at that time to be a hitter as the primary position – that's not that great. But especially considering what we've seen the last couple of years from Alex Gordon, if we got that season from Alex Gordon, we would love it. And then the next year, Billy Butler, he didn't play. You know, he had started to decline, so he wasn't starting like he was before, but he still hit 284, 336, 416 with five home runs. So again, you know, power is not quite there from someone who you want to be a power hitter. But, you know, again, if you took – even if you had that over a full season and you still only had five home runs over a full season for Alex Gordon, but putting up those kind of numbers, you'd still take that. And the point of all that is to say that's what Billy Butler did his last few years, and he's out of baseball. You know, he's got nothing going on right now. And granted, he doesn't have the glove that Alex Gordon did, so that's, you know, the big thing that hurts him and what is probably keeping him off a roster to because he can't provide any other value. But, you know, if Gordon's losing a step, you know, that applies to the field too. So it's really strange to see just how quickly he's fallen off. And, you know, just kind of came without warning. It was, you know, hey, he was the hero in the World Series in 2015, and then he's basically stunk ever since. Thankfully he hasn't let it translate into the field. He still played good defense, but man, it's just he's just really fallen off. And I don't, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that he's given no indication that things are going to get better. And this spring has been bad. And, you know, there's been kind of talk about how, you know, Dayton Moore might have to make that decision to cut him, even though he's getting paid so much money and, you know, all the rest. I mean, right now it's not as though he's blocking anybody, so it's kind of easy to just say, hey, maybe we'll get lucky and he'll snap out of it after 2 years.
Right.
But, you know, if another option presents itself and the Royals are in any position where it would help the team and they can possibly – you know, whether they're already in contention or whether it could put them in contention or whatever, you know, you have to seriously consider cutting ties with him, and that sucks. But, yeah. You know, that's the unfortunate reality of where Alex Gordon is, and for that reason, I don't think 239 is something that he can eclipse, and that's really sad to say, something I didn't think I'd ever say about Gordon. I thought even when he aged, you know, he'd still be pumping out the 250 average. It would just be, you know, lack of power and not as many doubles as he previously hit, et cetera, et cetera. But nope, it's just completely gone, vanished.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just be league average and I think you're fine. I mean, you're going to be overpaying if he's league average, but okay.
You're at least getting some value.
Yeah. You're getting something besides just the glove. And I mean, the glove is good. I mean, I think last year he had one of his better defensive seasons. But, you know, it's left field. It's not a primary defensive position. It's, you know, you want someone who's good there, but it's not like playing a good center field or a good shortstop. It's, you know, it's left field. It's not as high on that tree. So, you know, as long as that's there, that's a way to produce. His leadership has some value, but, you know, it's it's not $20 million worth of value. So it's tough, and I mean, I'll root for them, you know, until they make the tough decision. You know, always going to have a sentimental soft spot for Alex Gordon, even if it's going to be maybe frustrating to watch him hit.
Yes. So, all right, with that, we have concluded the over-under segment.
Congratulations, everyone. You've made it.
Yay,
for the fourth
made
year.
It. For the fourth year. So now, as we are wont to do, we have each of us have two bold, semi-bold, bold predictions for the Royals. So we'll alternate these as well. Just some highlights, you know, in years past. Of course, last year I went from crazy to unbelievably smart to pretty crazy again with my Jason Vargas prediction of having an ERA under 4 when he was 2.62 ERA at the All-Star break, looking fantastic, and ended the season over it with just a horrible end to it. But I did also predict that Jorge Soler would be sent to Omaha.
Yeah.
So Mike,
you get that.
Yep, and Mike, you predicted that the team home run record would fall, and it absolutely did.
It sure did.
And you also predicted Kyle Zimmer would have 20 innings pitched in the big leagues, and that did not happen. So we were both similar boats last year.
Yeah.
So you want to go first, or you want me to go first here?
I can go first. My first one is about a young pitcher, but it's not—it's not an innings pitched mark.
Okay.
It is that
new approach this year. New approach.
New approach. It's not innings pitched because we aren't allowed to do that anymore because we keep missing and screwing it up and our predictions suck because we really like those young prospecty guys. But I'm going to pick kind of a post prospecty guy. And that's Miguel Almonte. And I think that this year he's going to end the year with at least 10 major league saves.
10 saves in the major leagues for Miguel Almonte. That is interesting.
Miguel Almonte.
That's a name we heard quite a bit a few years ago. He was a young prospect, kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, really did.
From the Royals Latin American recruiting and kind of stormed through the minors and then kind of stalled out and then, you know, never really materialized a ton in the big leagues, but he has definitely had a much better spring and there's been some pretty positive talk on that. So that's an interesting pick. I like it. I like where your head's at.
The difficulty with this is that one, okay, he's not starting the year off, you know, on the big league team, but he'll be up as long as he pitches well, he will be up. And I think he's looked pretty good this spring. When you look at it, you know, who's ahead of him for saves? Calvin Herrera, who struggled with that role last year. I think he will be better, but I also think that there might be a chance that Herrera runs into some more injury issues. His velocity is up a little bit this spring. I think I saw maybe, you know, a tick, a mile an hour, which maybe that helps him. But I also think he's a good candidate to be traded later on this year, too, especially if the Royals are out of it. He's a closer. Those guys are always in demand come the trade deadline. He's got playoff experience. I think he'd be a really attractive option for any contending team. That would create a vacuum in that closer's role. The other guy would be Brandon Maurer, who has never really been that impressive, even though the stuff looks pretty good. And I think that if Almonte comes in, he might be able to throw pretty well. You know, even looking back, you know, I looked at Joaquin Soria and his first full year of the big leagues when he was a Rule 5 guy. He started that season closing a few games because Octavio Dotel was injured. But the last 2 months of the season after they had traded Octavio Dotel for Kyle Davies, Soria still saved a few games and ended up with 15 saves by the end of it. So, you know, I think going off of that, the early work might not be there, but I think by the end of the year, Almonte will have a shot. I think that this team is probably a little better than that. Well, maybe it's a little better than that 2007 team. And I think that puts in a position that if that role is up for grabs, I think he can go out and take it.
There it is. That's interesting. And, you know, I feel like Almonte is another scenario, too, where, you know, he's got options, so they're going to kind of use him. But if he didn't have options, I feel like he might be on the roster to start the season. Cause,
yeah.
You know, I definitely agree that he will be up. So that's interesting. I like that. That is bold. And it's actually a good segue into my first bold prediction because, as you mentioned, Kelvin Herrera, I think Kelvin Herrera will have a bounce-back season. To put a number on it, I would say Herrera will have over 20 saves by the All-Star break. And I think the importance behind that will be that it'll have, you know, there'll be good season with good stats, and I think he will not end the season with the Royals. I think he will be traded because he will have a good first half, and I don't think that the Royals will be in much contention. And hopefully, having learned from years past, they will know that you don't need a closer when you're not a contending team.
Right.
So
sell them high.
So I guess ipso facto, I have also made almost the same prediction as you, because I do think that Almonte would have a good shot at kind of filling that role, as good a shot as any reliever on this team of filling that role.
Yeah.
Once Herrera gets traded. So chances are, if one of us gets this prediction, then the other one will get it as well, if that makes sense.
It's pretty, pretty decent. They're simpatico.
So indeed. So now we'll go on. I'll go first now with the second one. So this may be the boldest – well, it's the boldest of the two that I've made as far as my predictions this
I
year.
I saved mine for so, that too. So
I think Jorge Soler is going to hit 25 home runs this year.
25 homers.
It's a big number. He's never hit more than 12, I believe, is high. But he's also never had, like we were talking about earlier, with the 500 at-bats, he's never had consistent at-bats over the course of a full season where he knew he was the guy. So I think that's it. And like we talked about earlier, I think the Royals are in a position where they got, like you said earlier, nothing to lose. So they'll keep him in there. They'll let him fight through some things. And I think it's going to pay off because, when he's going to be on, I think he can be prone to some good streaks where he's probably going to hit a lot of home runs. Some of those stretches we saw Moose go on in kind of early season last year, 3 home runs in 4 games, 6 home runs in 7 games, stretches like that.
Brandon Moss had a few like that too, where he hit like 4 homers in 2 weeks and then he did nothing for a week and a half, and then he did it again and just kept repeating it.
Yeah, so I definitely think those kinds of stretches are a possibility, but I also think he's kind of got that or if prodigious is the right term, but that kind of power that even when he's struggling, he's just going to run into a few, mm-hmm. So he might not be given consistent at bats. I don't know that he'll be super prone to really long droughts without a home run, just because I think his natural ability will just kind of let him luck into a few when he's, if he has some of those, 2014, 2013 Hosmer stretches where he, hits 190 for a month or something, but he still might hit, 5 or 6 home runs in that time span. So that's probably my boldest prediction it is my boldest prediction for the year, that I think Jorge Soler is going to hit that 25 home runs. And we kind of talked about with the 500 bats. I don't know that we've really made any sort of prediction about batting average or anything with that. I don't know him. We'll call this a bonus one, I guess, but I don't think it's going to be very high. I think he might be in like the 230, 235 range.
Yeah. He's still got a lot of that swing and miss, but.
Yeah. But, a 235, but maybe like a 330 on base and 25 home runs. Because that's the kind of hitter that he is, the kind of Adam Dunn-like approach almost. So,
right. Yeah. Well, 3 true outcomes and all of that. Yeah. Very, very, very Mossian.
Yes. So. That's my boldest prediction. So we'll save the best for last, if you will. What's Michael Engel's boldest prediction?
Well, the 18 Royals? Just before I want to jump onto your Soler, because the Pecota projection, his 90th percentile, has him at 26 home runs, which seems like, oh my gosh, how is such a high percentile only at 26? So I think it comes down to the playing time for him. His 50th percentile is still 21. So I mean, it's not like it's a wide variance. Pecota's still pretty strong on him. The year that he hit 12 homers, his career high, was in 227 at-bats. So it's about 1 per 19. If you prorated that over 500 at-bats, he gets to 26. So I think he's got a shot at doing that if he's healthy and gets the playing time we expect him to get. So, I like that. And I think that'd be – I think that'd be just great for him and the Royal psyche, just because he was, he was invisible last year. I mean, he was hardly ever up, and when he was on the bench or not doing anything. Okay, so my second bold prediction. I feel like by the end of the year, after all the hullabaloo, all the coverage, all the craziness of this offseason, I think that the Royals will get a better season out of Lucas Duda than Eric Hosmer. I think when you compare their two numbers, I think Lucas Duda will do better than Eric Hosmer. Based on
like where your head's at.
Let's say OPS, just offensively.
To put a number on.
Just to put a number on it, just so we can compare, you know, apples to apples. So just kind of at a glance, you know, I think some of the things that Hosmer has an advantage on is like batting average. He's a lot better of a contact hitter, but Duda has more power and he walks more. And so I think it pretty much evens out. If you look at it over the course of their careers, let me get the look here. Their 90th percentile ranks for this season has Lucas Duda at a 376 on base and a 516 slugging percentage. Has Eric Hosmer at 372 on base and 477 slugging. So despite a 33-point difference in their projected 90th percentile projection batting average, Duda still comes out ahead because more of his game is built on being able to work a walk, judgment of the strike zone, pitchers pitching around him because he can, you know, hit the ball really far, and he's got a lot of that power. So I think when you compare the two, on the surface, Hosmer has that batting average. But, you know, when you're comparing hitters, you can't just look at batting average because someone can hit 280 and have a 300 on base percentage, and they're still making an out 70% of the time versus somebody who's hitting 280. John Jay, if he hits 280 and has a 350 on base percentage, well, he's getting on base 5% of the time more often than that other guy. Even though their batting average may be the same, the production might be a lot better for one player because they can walk a little bit more. And in this case, the power really comes into play too. So if you kind of just compare last season, Eric Hosmer had 192 hits. Lucas Duda had 92 hits. And yet, in the end, when you factor in walks and total bases as a result of those hits, based on the number of games they played, they averaged the same number of bases per game, which is a very made-up stat, I admit. The angle I'm looking at here is that Lucas Duda walked 60 times in 127 games. Eric Hosmer walked 66 times in all 162. Duda had 210 total bases, 6 intentional walks, got hit by a pitch 6 times. All told, he touched, based on his own results at the plate, touched 288 bases. Not looking at errors or anything. This is just, you know, back of the napkin kind of stuff. Works out to about 2.27 per game. Eric Hosmer ended up 66 walks, 300 total bases, 3 intentional walks, no hit by pitch, which was odd. I figured he would have had one. Over 162 games, 2.27. So I think in the end, I don't know if that stat means anything, but just as a comparison, they can touch, you know, you're just looking at how they can get on base and kind of acquire bases, I guess. In the end, I feel like their on base may be very similar, and the edge is going to go to that power, and Lucas Duda has more power. Now, the one thing is, if the National League is an easier league as it tends to be perceived as, and if the American League then is the tougher league, that may sway it, you know, because Duda has played almost exclusively in the National League with the Mets. He hit 175 with the Rays once he was traded there last year over a couple of months. But the power was, I mean, he hit a ton of homers there anyway. Hosmer hit very, very well last year, is going to be going to what is seemingly an easier league. Maybe that makes my bold prediction fall apart because whatever Hosmer has, boost it and Duda maybe drop it. But yeah, I think when it's all told, the Royals are going to look at a really nice bargain in signing Lucas Duda. The other thing is Duda may not be healthy as Hosmer. So, you know, if we're looking at OPS, you know, maybe by that measure, Duda has a better year on paper there. Hosmer may still have a more well-rounded and more consistent contribution to the Padres. But, you know, if you compare their contracts, you compare their reputations, it shouldn't even be close. But I think Duda's got a shot to be a more productive hitter than Eric Hosmer.
Wow. That is definitely bold. And I absolutely like where your head's at on that one. I definitely didn't put as much thought into that particular topic as you did, but that was fascinating. The total bases and all that, how it winds up, how kind of close they are despite their, you know, the surface level appearance of their statistics. So
dingers.
That'll be interesting. Dingers. That'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. So I like that. That's bold. That's what we do this for. That was very bold.
Yeah, we'll see. Now, if you're looking at, like, wins above replacement player, well, there's a reason why I picked OPS.
Yeah.
Because Pecota definitely likes Hosmer a lot better on that front. And I think base running also. Duda's not going to steal bases. Eric Hosmer can. And that that helps. But and that's not to say that I think Eric Hosmer's going to have a bad year. I think they're both going to have pretty good years. But I think if you look at the OPS, Duda's power is going to give him a little bit of an edge.
I like it. And so concludes another year of the over-under jamboree with bonus bold predictions. So I guess we'll end it on this. We haven't really talked about this yet. Let's talk about records. Prediction for the Royals record this year. I'll go ahead and start off my prediction. I'm not breaking any molds here with this, but I'm going with 72-90 is what I think. As much as it pains me to see the Royals or to imagine the Royals back in that 90 loss category, I don't foresee enough. It's weird because there's a lot that I like about this team, but not enough to really think it's going to make all that much of a difference. You know, I like Jake Junis as a young pitcher. I like Danny Duffy, and I even like him to take just, you know, we keep waiting for that one step forward, and I'm not necessarily predicting that'll happen, but, you know, I like the odds of it happening because I still think it's possible for him. You know, I've already made the bold prediction about Soler. You know, I think, you know, I like what you said about Duda. I think he can provide some value. You know, John Jay will be a good, you know, so there's, even if those moves are kind of perplexing in terms of like where the Royals are going, like just in a vacuum, it's like, okay, you know, Lucas Duda for $3 million and John Jay for $3 million or however much they signed for, you know, somewhere, you know, boom, that's nothing, you know, and then getting Moose back and having him possibly being able to drop 40 home runs on us, you know, I mean, that's all good stuff. I just, none of it's enough to really tip the scales to say, okay, they can contend for a wild card spot. And, you know, I think part of the reason, if I had to guess why the Royals made some of these moves in the offseason that they did, it's because they see so many teams tanking, and we've kind of talked about this before, but they see so many teams just, you know, outwardly tanking and not being shy about it that their Royals are thinking, you know what, if we can cobble together a team that's just good enough to beat all these teams that are, you know, 100 lost teams, even, you know, say there's 7 or 8 of them that are kind of in that category, even if they all might not lose exactly 100. But if we can cobble together a team that could just beat up on those teams whenever we play, you know, then maybe we can just get lucky enough to, you know, do well enough against the rest of the division and you know, steal a few games from some good teams. And next thing you know, we're, you know, maybe it takes 83 wins to get a wild card spot. And I mean, if enough things bounce your way in a particular year, just look at the 2003 Royals. You know, you can win 83 games if even if your team isn't all that great on paper. So,
right.
So it's you know, I got to feel like that's probably some of the motivation. But regardless, nothing that has been done is enough to persuade me that is a tangible reality for this team. So I'm going with 72 wins. So where do you fall out on this?
Well, I'm tempted to say something different because I would also say 72 and 90, but we're also going to be doing predictions through Baseball Prospectus Kansas City mm-hmm. as an entire staff. And that's what I submitted to Dave Leske. So it's going to be in writing somewhere. So I can't really backtrack from it. But I think that's right on. I think that, Leske has a post on bpkansascity.com titled "So Much Needs to Go Right for the Royals." And like everything that we've talked about, all the good things, it's exactly that. I mean, John Jay has to be that on base guy. Soler has to be healthy. He has to hit. Gordon has to bounce back. Duffy has to take that other step and continue where he was in 2016. Junis has to be solid. The bullpen has to be good. You know, all of those things have to work. They kind of have to hit on every move that they made. And that still might not be enough to do anything playoff-wise. And even so, even if they're still bad, even if things don't go well and Soler gets hurt and Gordon's still bad and Junis goes up and down and Duffy's, more last year Duffy than 2016 Duffy and all of that, even if they're bad, last year 72 wins would have been better than seven teams. So the real incentive to tanking is to get those higher draft picks. And there may be a world out there where the Royals, without even trying to tank, are kind of still in the same position as if they were trying to tank. Because you've got some, the Marlins are going to be bad. The Rays are probably going to be bad. The Tigers could be bad. The Reds might still be bad. You might tear it all up and, miss out on a little bit of fan revenue from ticket sales and other things and still only get to like the fifth pick. And so there's, that incentive, the likelihood of reaching it, of being the first, second, maybe even third pick is just gone. And so I think that, that just kind of puts the Royals in a position where it's like, well, if you can add Moustakas and Duda and John Jay, three solid enough regulars for $13 million, why not? What the heck? They've cut a good chunk of payroll this offseason. You might as well bring in big leaguers. They're not, no one's going to cry that John Jay is blocking Paulo Orlando. I like Paulo Orlando fine, but
nothing wrong with Paulo Orlando.
He's more accustomed to be a fourth outfielder. And so John Jay can come in and play center field. Fine. Lucas Duda was available. I think he's going to have a good year. They didn't have a clear-cut guy to take over at first base. All right, fine. And Moustakas, a lot of reasons to do that. And plus, any of those guys, if they're playing well in July, they're nothing financially for a team that wants to trade for him. It's not like you're trying to take on Verlander's contract when he got traded to Houston. It's like, okay, maybe they'll have to pay $1 million out of Duda's remaining salary. No, that's fine. Teams will happily do that. They may as well just do that, But I also think that, all the things that have to go right probably won't. So if they were an 80-win team last year with guys that we really like Kane and Hosmer and all of that, in the same position now, they're probably going to be a little worse than that. So Pecota projects them for 65 wins. I don't think they're going to be that low.
That's a little too negative.
It somehow went down when they signed like Mike Moustakas. I don't know how that worked. Pecota's a fickle mistress.
A fickle mistress.
I think it's going to be a weird season. I don't think they're going to be terrible, but they're not going to be good. So I'm at 72 and 90. That's what I've jotted down. So I'm in that same territory as you are.
Yeah, that's what I put for Leske's poll as well, 72 and 90, that's why I said I'm not breaking any molds. I think that 72 win mark is going to be pretty common from a lot of the prognosticators around baseball, and you know, somewhere in that range. So 70 to 75 is probably, you know, where they shake out. If they, you know, they're able to snag a couple wins, maybe they shouldn't. They get 75. If they lose a couple, they shouldn't. Maybe they get 70. Maybe they drop down to, I don't know, 67 or something. If it was just everything went to pot.
But, yeah. But I think you need less than or fewer than 60 wins to be that number one, number two team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I mean, I think we're looking at like a 55 and 107 type of year that takes that number one draft spot.
Enjoy it, Miami.
Yeah, enjoy it. The Royals, when they got the number one, they were 56 and 106 that year. But they were.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good, but
no,
it sure wasn't 55.
No,
I think they made 58 wins.
Yeah, they.
I don't know. Once you fall under 60, it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, they had those 4 years where they had 100 losses, so out of 5 years. So who knows? But it'll be definitely really interesting to see just the race to the bottom, if you will, almost more compelling than the race to the top because it. You know, when filling out, I won't give spoilers for who I predicted to win all the divisions and such, but it was a lot of the usual suspects, put it that way.
Yeah. You know, there was
a lot of the teams that were really good last year, either kind of maintained or got better, and the teams that were really bad last year actively got worse.
Right.
So, you know, the Royals are kind of in that weird middle, the Royals and the Twins. You know, they're kind of, you know, some other teams like the Rays maybe, Rangers, the A's. Those are the kind of teams that are in that sort of middle ground where they weren't that great last year. They didn't actively get worse, not necessarily trying to tank. But, you know, what did they really do to get all that much better either? So... those, you know, it'll be kind of interesting to see that kind of there'll be a race to the bottom and a race to the top, and then all those other teams in there in the middle just trying to
it's kind of bumping into each other.
Yeah. But, all right, so that sums it up. Another year down in the books, and we'll have one more show before the season kicks off, but then that's it. One more show, and then it's real, legitimate baseball. We already know it's already been announced. I don't think we went over this yet, but that Danny Duffy will be starting opening day for the Royals. No shock there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, probably why we didn't really discuss it, probably, you know, not super newsworthy, but there it is. He will be starting first game of the season, as many would have predicted. So, that's where we're headed. Danny Duffy taking the mound, day one, game one, just a few short days away, and one more show from us. And that show will be next week, and that will be the next time that we see you, or next time that you hear from us. So until then, be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, of course. They're, if you hit up St. Patrick's Day, or if you went out on St. Patrick's Day, there was hopefully a good chance you went to Kelly's because that was the place to be, as it always is for St. Patrick's Day. We'll have some watch parties there throughout the year as we usually do. And in the meantime, go to BP Kansas City. We continue to pump out content, of course, especially now. It's getting more more feverish as we head towards the season, where we'll have even more more fun things to write about and to discuss on the site. And Mike alluded to one of Dave Leske's articles talking about, you know, everything that needs to go right, and even that might not still be enough for the Royals. So be sure to check that out and check out everything from all the fantastic writers we have on there. And until then, we'll see you next week. So thank you all so much for listening. We love you all. Couldn't do it without you. See you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitosis.
Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.